taking a walk, breathing fresh air, watching water as it flows down a stream. Many of us turn to nature instinctively when we're looking for respite, and research shows that those instincts are sound. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, harnessing the power of nature in medicine and therapy. I'll talk with Dr. Suzanne Bartlett, integrative medicine specialist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. She has incorporated nature therapy into her medical practice. I'll also talk with Amos Clifford, founder and director of the Association of Forest Therapy Guides and Programs. And we want to hear from you. How has turning to nature helped you? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Many of us turn to nature for peace, recreation, and inspiration. More and more scientific research is demonstrating the benefits of time spent in nature. And at the same time, our technology-driven culture is pulling us away from the natural world. This hour, we're going to talk about harnessing the power of nature in medicine and therapy. And we do want to hear from you this hour. How has turning to nature helped you? Do you use a form of nature therapy in your work, maybe as a teacher or another kind of educator, a counselor, a naturalist, as a parent? We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Dr. Suzanne Bartlett. She's an integrative medicine specialist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids, and she has incorporated nature therapy into her medical practice. Hello, Dr. Bartlett.
Good morning. Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, give me a little bit of your background. You were trained as an OBGYN?
Sure, that's exactly right. Started as an OBGYN and a few years back started exploring the possibility and the idea of integrative medicine. So I completed a fellowship in integrative medicine through the University of Arizona. It's Dr. Andrew Weil's program, and I know a number of people are familiar with him and his work. So I completed that program in December of 2013.
And for people who don't know, what is integrative medicine?
Exactly. Integrative medicine combines, I think, the best of all worlds. So it combines conventional medicine also with alternative and complementary approaches that are evidence-based, that have some research to support their use. So I spend a lot of time now talking with patients about all of these other things that naturally can enhance their wellness. So things like nutrition, exercise, nature, community, spirituality, maybe herbal medicine, the mind-body connection, all of these things that we know influence health and not just the physical body.
As a doctor, what was something that made you think, I need something more? I need to look for something more when I'm working with my patients.
Right. Well, it's a multifactorial, very long answer to that question, but in general, I felt like my tool bag was limited with conventional medicine, with surgery and pharmaceutical medications, and patients were asking for more. They were asking me questions that I sometimes didn't have answers to about herbal medicine and things like that. And then factors from my personal life, family members contributed to wanting to know more and explore other options.
Let's talk specifically about nature therapy. Was this something that was always part of your personal life? Have you always had a relationship with the natural world personally?
Well, I think I have, back to childhood, certainly. And then you go through that period of school, college, medical school, residency. You kind of lose sight of that in some cases. But I certainly always enjoyed getting out, riding my bike, exercising, hiking, always been drawn to water, scuba diving, things like that. And so I've always tried to factor it in and always, you know, derived solace and personal therapy from those times.
What was it that made you think, I want to bring my patients outside? I want to help them connect with nature.
Right. Well, I always have felt confined in the exam room setting. Always felt just kind of like a caged bird and needed my, you know, personally to get outside during the day. And then one time by accident a few years back had an encounter with a patient where we just couldn't remain in the exam room due to her personal issues. And I actually suggested that we go outside and take a walk and have our discussion that way. And it ended up opening up the conversation in ways we didn't ever imagine it would. And I felt that it actually led to much greater healing than we would have been able to achieve if we had just sat in that exam room and hammered out and tried to make it work. So that was a very eye-opening moment. And since that time, I've just felt in many cases, you know, why don't we just take this conversation outside? So sometimes I do with patients. We literally go outside.
Well, and you've written about that particular appointment and how it changed you and helped you understand that connection a little bit better. Can you tell us more about it? I mean, obviously, I don't want you to violate any confidentiality, but tell us a little bit more about what happened during that encounter.
Yeah, well, that patient happened to have autism and just was not comfortable in the exam room or comfortable with my white coat. And so, yes, I wrote a blog called Ditching the Doctor's White Coat that ended up posted on the Nature and Forest Therapy website. But I realized right away that the white coat was making her more anxious. Being in that exam room was anxiety-provoking, and just said, let's get out of here. Took off my white coat, and we went for a walk outdoors. So as we walked, her family was behind us, and eventually, I kept asking questions, and the family members and caregivers were answering the questions for the patient. And surprisingly, as we walked, she took my hand, and it was something that was a very moving moment for the family. They were surprised because this was not a typical thing for her to do, and it just seemed like suddenly we had a bond and a connection that allowed us to catapult forward as far as her treatment was concerned.
There were a lot of different elements involved in that experience. I mean,
sure.
You took off the white coat, which is kind of an intimidating sign or an intimidating symbol. You also left the office, which can also be frightening to some patients.
Right.
What made you think that the being outside was the most important element of that?
Well, and I don't know if it was. Like I said, this and you just said, I think it was partially all of those factors. But yeah, I think that we all have increased calm and ability to focus when we're outdoors. It's less confining. We know from studies now that we breathe in all kinds of chemicals that cause relaxation and reduce anger and depression and anxiety and confusion and all of these things that she was certainly exhibiting. I think at that time it was probably more of a gut response than knowing that all of these chemicals are released in the body and all of these different things happen. It was just a gut feeling that it was what we needed to do.
As you went looking for more information to use in your medical practice, as I mentioned, there are these scientific studies that have been done over the years, really over the last 30 years. We've been getting more and more information that shows that being in nature is beneficial to us physically and mentally. When you went looking for more information, was there something that you found that really created an aha moment for you?
Well, I just started investigating all of these studies, and you're right, there have been numerous studies looking at all of these different factors, depression, anxiety, memory, cognitive function, obesity, response to chemotherapy, heart health, cancer, pregnancy, you know, it goes on and on. And so it was really exciting to discover how much research is being done.
How did you change your practice once you started digging into all that research?
Yeah, well, all of these things coincided along with my fellowship, which completely changed the way I practice medicine in general. You know, I used to write probably 150 prescriptions per week, and now I write maybe 3 to 5 per year, and that's not an exaggeration. So nature therapy is one tool in the toolbox now, but I mention it almost every day when I'm speaking with patients. Like, do you get outside? And then sometimes we take it further. So I like to bring up these studies and share what I can with patients. I've done workshops on the topic of nature and wellness, and it's exciting to be able to actually confirm with science what we've kind of already known for centuries.
How did doing all of this research change your own behavior, both just as an individual but also as a parent?
Well, I don't know how much it changed my behavior. I've always tried to spend as much time as I can outdoors, but I certainly try to get out on a daily basis and spend some time interacting or exercising in nature. I think it's key to my own well-being. I think my family, I know my family, knows that when I'm having a rough day, what I need is to get out and move. And so we kind of know that as a family, that this is what we need. We have to get out. We have to, and it's just part of our lifestyle.
When you started using nature therapy as a physician, did you get any pushback from the medical community you were part of?
I don't know that the medical community knows everything that goes on in my office.
I'm going to take that as a yes.
Right, exactly. No, not at all. I meet with my colleagues about weekly. I've been going out to different medical practices in the Cedar Rapids community and just kind of sharing what we're doing, what I'm about. And I've been in Cedar Rapids now for a little over 3 years doing integrative medicine. And I think at first there maybe was a little bit of, I wonder what this is all about, and thinking there was a lot of woo-woo stuff that I was probably doing. But the medical community has realized that I come from the same medical background as they do. I went to the University of Iowa College of Medicine. I trained in Pittsburgh for OBGYN. I have the same conventional background that they do. What I have that is beyond what they have are some of these other tools that they probably feel like they wish they had and can refer patients to me when they run out of those tools. So I think they're now seeing that I am practicing all kinds of things that are evidence-based. This is, it's a little woo-woo, but there is there's research to support its use, and that's something that works well with the rest of my colleagues. And so, no, I think I've had a really warm reception, and I think things are going really well. I actually get referrals from my colleagues, so that's a great thing.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Dr. Suzanne Bartlett, integrative medicine specialist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. She has incorporated nature therapy into her medical practice. We're going to continue the conversation about nature therapy, about what we get from interaction with nature. In a moment, Amos Clifford, founder and director of the Association of Forest Therapy Guides and Programs, will be here. We're going to talk about a Japanese practice called Shindanyoku, which means forest bathing. That's coming up in a moment. We also want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about harnessing the power of nature in medicine and in therapy. With me is Dr. Suzanne Bartlett. She is integrative medicine specialist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. She has incorporated nature therapy into her medical practice. And we're going to talk in just a moment about something called forest bathing, or Shindanyoku. It's a Japanese practice. But we also want to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We want to hear about how interacting with nature has helped you, or how you have harnessed the power of nature in your work, maybe as an educator or as a counselor or as a parent. Again, give us a call. And Lori is on the line in Columbus Junction. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to comment that I was a teacher for Chicago Public Schools, very inner city. Most of the kids lived in apartments, so there was no yard or anything. And another teacher and I implemented a gardening program where we would start seeds and we planted outside, and they kind of nurtured and beautified our area. And it was amazing. I really believe that the behavior of my children was so much more improved once we were able to get outside in a safe environment, because their neighborhood wasn't very safe, so playing outside wasn't an option. But just that they so enjoyed it and just were eager to be outside and eager to see how their plants were doing. And they discovered, we did science with it, they discovered insects in the soil and things like that. And I just wanted to say I'm a firm believer in kids gardening and being outside.
And can you tell me about something specific that you saw in one of your students that really made you think, hey, this is making a difference?
Well, this is a kind of a negative thing, but one time after we had planted and our flowers were blooming, someone came along and pulled them all up, and the children were extremely upset. And but they went outside and they replanted and they made a big sign saying, this was the children's garden, please don't destroy. And the fact that they cared so much about it, it was really touching to me, that it was something that they had created and cared about.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for sharing that with us today. And Dr. Bartlett, listening to Lori talk about using nature and time spent outside as an educator, you've probably seen people who don't spend a lot of time in nature who
right.
are transformed by making connections.
That's so true. I mean, most of the people I talk with don't spend a lot of time in nature, spend very little time in nature, if any. But when Lori was speaking, it reminded me of a study from 2006 where they looked at kindergartners in an outdoor setting where they had contact with nature versus children, kindergartners in an indoor setting. And they found that the kindergartners who had contact with nature were 58% more likely to invent new games than the kids who were in an indoor kindergarten who only invented new games 16% of the time. You know, and that's a striking statistically significant number, 58 versus 16% of inventing new games, imaginative play, and cognitive function. So she's absolutely right. That's exciting.
And I want to bring Amos Clifford into the conversation now. He's founder and director of the Association of Forest Therapy Guides and Programs. He's based in California. And, of course, again, throughout the hour, I know many people in Iowa are also doing this kind of work. So we do want to hear from you at 866-780-9100. Hello, Amos.
Good morning, Charity, and good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, Amos.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I know that Dr. Bartlett uses forest bathing in her practice, and this is an idea that really excited you. Can you tell us what it's all about?
Yeah, well, you've used the term shinrin-yoku a couple of times, which is a Japanese term. It was really coined in the 1980s by the Japan Forest Agency there. And it became a platform for really supporting quite a bit of the research that we have now. Shinrin-yoku translates basically as forest bathing. So think of it as bathing the senses in the ambiance of the forest. And so there's been a number of studies done where they'll have, you know, a group go into the forest for a couple of hours and just walk slowly and engage the senses. So really noticing what you're seeing, touching, smelling, tasting fruits or herbs that are in the forest, that kind of thing. And the studies have really consistently shown quite remarkable findings in terms of physiological indicators of both reduced stress and enhanced immune functioning, as well as the kinds of things that Suzanne's talking about with the increased creativity in children, many, many other similar findings. And so as the research has accumulated there, the term shinrin-yoku is just becoming known in the United States, and ironically they're kind of moving away from that in Japan because they're just calling it forest therapy. And what they've been able to do in Japan is establish a network of what they call forest therapy trails and bases. So extending the length of the islands, there's this idea of the forest therapy road where people can leave their very stressful situations and go for a weekend holiday of doing some guided forest therapy. And some of these bases actually have clinics at the trailhead where people can consult with physicians and nurses and get guidance on ways to use nature really specifically to enhance health. So what really excited me, you know, I'm a longtime advocate of nature connection. I began doing nature connection work way back when I was just out of my teens in 1973. And what really excited me was the idea of integrating nature connection into healthcare systems. That's what they're aiming for in Japan and South Korea in particular, and some other countries as well. And so I started thinking about, well, what would it take to do that here? And I talked with some physicians and also some managers for some of the large healthcare systems, and they said, well, you know, we would be more likely to do that if there were people who could guide competently and in a science-based way, so that when people were in nature, they were not endangering themselves. And, you know, I thought that was pretty good insight, because it's not safe to assume anymore that when our people go into nature that they'll do it in a skillful way. So working with some colleagues inspired somewhat by the Japanese practice, but also from my own career of experience, we developed a forest therapy system here and tested it with many groups here in California, and then developed a set of standards for what we feel are important for forest therapy guides to know and be able to do to really maximize the therapeutic value of time spent in nature, with the assumption that most people who get out into nature, we've got busy lives, so we're not going to be out there a lot. So if we're out there 2 hours once a month, what can we do to really maximize that?
Well, it's interesting that you say people going out in nature don't necessarily get what they need out of it. I mean, I'm surprised to hear that. We were just talking about, okay, kindergartners go outside and are in a natural environment and it increases their cognitive function and their creativity. And of course, they're not doing any kind of a guided approach. Yeah. They're just there. So don't we get something just from being
absolutely
there? Why do we need it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't mean to communicate that message at all. In fact, when I'm guiding a group, one of the first things I'll do is I'll say, I'm going to give you a series of invitations that are ways to connect with nature. But if you find yourself stressing and trying too hard to do these things right, just let it go, because just being here is actually enough. So just being outside is actually enough. However, it's a little bit like saying, you know, stretching is a good thing to do. If you stretch, you're going to get some benefits from it. If you work with a yoga instructor or a stretch therapist who really knows what they're doing, you're going to get a lot more from it. So it's a little bit like that.
Well, and I know that in your background, and you've been doing this for many, many years, you worked with taking young people who grew up in urban environments, teenagers in urban environments, into nature and helping them connect. And that's a program that's been going on for many years. In seeing young people who really hadn't had any experience in nature going out into the wilderness, I am sure you saw that sometimes it did cause stress and discomfort if it wasn't something that they had ever been exposed to before.
Yeah, predictably. I mean, we actually assume that there's going to be stress when we take people into nature, because there's not just being in an unfamiliar environment. And actually, it was some of the toughest inner city kids who got the most stressed and most fearful in nature, because it was so unfamiliar to them. So we just assume that. And I also assume that even when I'm guiding a 3-hour walk with a group of people and we're going no more than a quarter mile, I assume that there will be a couple of waves of stress in that. And in particular, when we're just moving slowly. We're not trying to get there. We're not trying to get somewhere else. We're just being here. And our minds are so conditioned to wanting to get to the task list or to pull out our device and check, you know, what's the latest thing on the Twitter feed or in my email and so on, that when we're walking slowly, simply being engaged with the environment we're in, our minds will go through a couple of waves of this kind of anxiety, like, oh, my God, I've got to get busy. I'm wasting my time. I should be productive. And it takes a little while to work through that. Everyone gets through that eventually. That's, in fact, I say that's one of my main jobs as a guide, is to slow people down and to give them enough support to do that effectively.
Well, and Dr. Bartlett, I want to bring you back into the conversation as well. When you first encountered this idea of Shinrin-yoku, what appealed to you about it?
Well, I first started reading about it probably 3 years ago and absolutely was in love with it. It combines several of the things that I already use with patients, including mindfulness-based stress reduction. I led a group just last night at Prairie Woods in Cedar Rapids doing this practice, and we talked afterwards about the number of different modalities that were actually brought into it. We had some energy medicine brought into it. We had herbal medicine brought into it. You know, it just was so all-encompassing just in this one practice.
Interesting. So now, when you do a workshop based in this idea of forest bathing, what do you do? How does it go?
Well, I've been following the practices that Amos has put together and trying to use some of these invitations, as he calls them, and actually structured activities to try to work with people to drop in, as he said, to slow down, which is, as he said, very difficult for people, and they comment on that it takes a while and they can actually feel it happening. We do some breathing when we start. We bring in some gratitude practices, and then we work through the senses. And as he said, we're not really going very far. We went maybe 2/3 of a mile over the course of 3 hours last night. But it was very impactful. There were outstanding comments. People were very moved by this. They shared very intimate experiences with it. And I think went home feeling like it was worthwhile.
And when you're moving so slowly through a natural environment, are you talking, or is being quiet part
Not
of this?
Not very much talking. I would give a little bit of a suggestion of what they could explore. So various different activities, again, using vision and hearing and olfactory or smell and ultimately taste. So we walked, we did those, and then they're able to go off on their own and explore this activity. And then we would gather in a circle, and if people felt so inclined, they could share about their experiences, and then we would move on to something else. So not a lot of talking, not a lot of, definitely no chit-chat, and that's part of being able to drop in.
When the blog post that we were talking about earlier, Ditching the Doctor's White Coat, you share some of the comments of people who went through one of your Shinrin-yoku workshops. How do people respond? What do they say?
Well, yeah, and I think I started in that article about I was so surprised that a week later, that was in the middle of a several week workshop series. So I saw the same people each week, and when they came back the week after doing that nature practice, several of them reported that they had done the same thing on their own during the intervening week, which is exactly what this is expected to be. This is not a one-time experience. This is something that you're invited to do whenever you can, and it's not difficult. This is something you can do any day, or at least a portion of it. So let's see, what was the question? So what kinds of comments? I think just a real surprise that you can get so deeply into the senses and that we can even learn survival skills. You know, that's kind of
an interesting thing. You start to realize how you can trust your senses and your intuition and these things if you were stuck in the woods. You know, I think there was some discussion about that last night, that, yeah, we're capable of these things. So lots of positive feedback.
Yeah, and Amos, give us a little bit of insight into how people respond to some of the guide or the guided tours or time in nature that you've led.
Yeah, we just call them forest therapy walks, and the responses are universally very positive. They often surprise me by how powerful they're affecting people. I've had people tell me that even a single walk can be quite transformative, just in terms of people slowing down enough to reflect on their lives, to get insights about how they're living and maybe what's important. Many people get answers to big questions that they're carrying on these walks. Now, I don't promise that. You know, I don't say, let's go take a walk and you'll get big answers to your questions. But I've seen that a lot. And I want to highlight something that Suzanne shared.
Well, and we're going to have to take a short break, but you can highlight that when we get back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about nature therapy. We've been talking about Shindanyoku, the idea of forest bathing. It's a Japanese idea, and we'd love to hear from you as well. Amos Clifford, founder and director of the Association of Forest Therapy Guides and Programs, is here with us. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about nature therapy, harnessing the power of nature in medicine and therapy and the rest of life as well. With me, Amos Clifford, founder and director of the Association of Forest Therapy Guides and Programs. He's based in California. Dr. Suzanne Bartlett is here, integrative medicine specialist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. She's incorporated nature therapy into her medical practice. And we've been talking a lot about Shindanyoku, which is a Japanese idea that means forest bathing. And Amos, just before the break, I interrupted you. You wanted to comment on something that Dr. Bartlett said.
Yeah, and also to respond a little bit more to your question that you had asked about what are some of the things that we see that people report. And just a couple of things, examples that I think illustrate common kinds of things that happen. On one walk, we were sitting in a meadow after we'd been walking for a couple of hours, and people were sharing. We'd been doing this very slow walking, very relaxed, connecting with nature through our senses in different ways. And so one woman had a really puzzled look on her face, and she said she felt like something was missing. And then the little light bulb went off, and she said, "It's the pain. I've had this pain in my back and neck for 2 years, and right now I'm sitting here without this pain." Mm. And that was really interesting. Another woman contacted me after a walk and said that she had serious insomnia for years, and the night after the walk, she slept very well. And then I've had a number of people who have chronic pervasive pain come on these walks and say that for a period of hours to maybe a day afterwards, the pain is either absent or much reduced. So something's going on that's really pretty powerful with that. And one of the things that I wanted to highlight from what Suzanne was saying is when she takes people on walks, she has them, gives them the opportunity to share with each other what they're experiencing. And that's a core part of what we do in guided forest therapy, is after we give invitations and people have had an experience, we gather together in a little circle and everyone has an invitation to just share, what are they noticing? That's usually the question we ask. What are you noticing? And people share these experiences that are very alive for them in the moment, and that the other people in the circle really understand. So in other words, they feel quite witnessed and seen and heard in the experiences they're having in connection with nature. And a part of what happens with that is that their sense of being embedded in a social network is enhanced. And we know there's a whole range of health benefits just from that. If you've got a positive social network, you know, this kind of sharing of it, like if I go back to the office, say after I've done a walk and share with people who don't do this practice, they're not going to quite get it in mm-hmm. the same way that my companions on the trail are. Then one thing that is particularly potent in this regard is when we do a series, like Suzanne was talking about. So we'll do these series that we call 7-7 immersions. So that means it's 7 walks in 7 weeks. We try to do it around seasonal changes. So over the period of 7 weeks, you can literally see spring unfolding, or you can see the process of fall as winter is coming. And having the same group together for these 7 weeks develops such a powerful social bond that every time I've done this, when I've been done with the 7-week immersion, that group continues on
oh,
its own
wow.
without a guide.
That does
We've
say
seen that
a lot.
Too. Yeah. I saw that with my series as well.
Yeah.
Very interesting. We have a lot of people who want to join this conversation with me. Amos Clifford, founder and director of the Association of Forest Therapy Guides and Programs. Dr. Suzanne Bartlett, integrative medical specialist at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. And let's get to the phones. Yasha is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Yasha.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Very good. And this is something you use in your work, right?
I'm a volunteer for Hike a Baby, which is a national organization dedicated to getting families with young children outside from newborn on up. It's a really great way to just get outside. We go for hikes in the woods. We go for walks around the park. And it's just really a great benefit for young babies. I've seen it in my own son. You know, after we go outside in the woods, he sleeps better. He takes naps better. He's calmer.
Well, and I can imagine for a lot of people, when their babies are young, there are things that they worry about outside, whether it's mosquitoes or sunburn or things that create barriers to getting outside and into nature. So, Yasha, do you find that you have to help people overcome some of their fears to get out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely a worry when you have a newborn who seems so fragile that you don't want to break them or bring them outside. But with this group, it's wonderful because we're all supporting each other. We go out in groups. So, you know, if you need help using a carrier, if you're not really sure, if you need sunscreen, we're all there to help each other and just motivate each other to get outside.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And Dr. Bartlett, I'd love for you to weigh in on that, because I do think people, you know, going outside as a child is a very natural experience, and it's something a lot of us did a lot when we were kids, yet kids today don't do it nearly as much. I mean, are there barriers that we have created ourselves to getting out there?
I think we've definitely created barriers. We have this idea that everything needs to be sterile and clean, and yet we know that children who play in the dirt have much stronger immune functions and lower inflammation, and that relates to better health down the road, fewer chronic diseases and things, less obesity, even improved cognitive function. There's a study that looked at mice in a maze, and they studied one of the kinds of bacteria found in soil that we ingest and we inhale when we're just playing in dirt, and they found that those mice actually navigated the maze 2 times faster than those that were just sitting there not playing in the dirt. So there's just a ton of evidence now looking at the importance of children being exposed to nature and dirt and getting out and playing. Obviously, there are things that we want to protect against, but I think we can safely do that much more than we sometimes are believing that we can.
Well, and Peter in West Des Moines has a related question, not necessarily about kids in dirt, but grown-ups in dirt. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, it's interesting because I've seen on the internet recently new research to soil and all of the things that happen within soil, and then at the same time with my own experience having started a community garden down in Des Moines, downtown Des Moines, I can totally relate to that, my experience with that and digging in the soil. And so you think about if you're in a forest and all of this that is happening in the soil and with plants and how they grow, and they bring out all of these things that can then you breathe in and can affect you mentally, your mental state. even removing pain from your body because of some of the materials that you're breathing in. The research has shown that this is completely true.
Well, and Peter, I'm gonna let my guests respond to that. Your phone line is breaking up on us, so it's really hard to understand you. But Amos, I am sure that this is something that you've looked into, the kinds of things that we're exposed to when we're out in nature. It's not just proximity, but actually the bacteria, the chemicals, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the forest is such a rich soup and a balanced soup of different kinds of biochemical processes, and you know, one of my favorite things to do when I guide is to just scoop up a handful of dirt. I like to do this a lot of times. Gophers leave these really beautiful little fresh piles of clean dirt, and we'll scoop up that handful and we'll pass it around and just invite everyone to feel it and to smell it, and it's a universally delightful experience. Everybody loves that feeling of dirt, and there's a part of me that thinks we all want to do that. There's some things we all want to do as grown-ups that we don't give ourselves time to do. We want to walk barefoot through a mud puddle or a stream. We want to lay on our backs and look at the clouds. We want to just run our hands through the rich soil of the earth. And on the forest therapy walks, the guided walks that we do, that's one category of invitations. We call it the things that we all want to do anyway, right?
We did a lot of that last night.
So, and again, I mean, that goes back to the barriers we create for ourselves.
Right.
So maybe not similar to the barriers we create for kids, but just thinking that we have maybe too much dignity to do some of the things that we...
We had to check all of that at the door when we stepped outside last night.
Nice. All right, Dave is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Let me catch my breath. I'm a former wilderness guide, and about 40 years ago, I was at Greenfield College, and my professor, Larry Buell, had codified all this experience and put it into a book called The 24-Hour Experience. And I was wondering, the one doctor he was talking earlier, if there was kind of ground rules for how to do this. Larry had figured this out and created a whole network of, sorry, instructors, I was running. created a whole network of instructors that were doing this throughout the country. And it's really amazing that you guys are doing this now. And that's all. I just want to introduce you to that book. If you've never heard about it, Professor Larry Buell, The 24-Hour Experience.
All right, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call. And, you know, it is interesting because these ideas have been around for a long time in one way or another. It does feel like there is a gathering force behind it, or maybe a greater credibility to it at this point in time. And Amos, I'd love to get your thoughts on it because you've been involved in this for 40 years.
Yeah, you know, I one of my advisors, who John Handy, who's who just passed away 2 weeks ago, but he's been really important mentor to me on this. He retired from a career as a professor and dean of forestry, and when he came to one of my walks the first time, along with his wife, who's a 30-year wilderness guide, he got so excited. And what he said is, particularly around the research, he said, you know, this is what I've been waiting for my whole career, is this kind of practice based on this kind of research that's showing the physiological markers of beneficial change from time spent in forests. This is what we need. And I think he speaks for many, many people, because what I see is a groundswell, just a wave of interest in this that's very widespread. It's global. I've been very surprised. You know, I started the Association of Nature and Forest Therapy Guides and Programs just 3 years ago, and we have so much interest from all over the world that I'm really surprised in a really good way by how much support there is for this kind of practice. And what I find is that when I tell people about the practice, I don't really have to justify the part about time in nature is good for you. Like, everyone gets that. But it's also really important that we have the research for those who are in the healthcare field in particular, because they're scientists. They're trained to think like scientists, and they need to know this. And so we're seeing a small but growing number of physicians now who are writing nature prescriptions and park prescriptions, similar to what Suzanne is doing.
And I want to ask about exercise, because obviously there are a lot of doctors also writing exercise prescriptions, which is terrific preventative medicine. We have this from David in Muscatine: my outdoor therapy is riding my bicycle and planting trees. And Audrey's on the line in Mason City. And Audrey, I know you have a question about exercising in nature. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, I love trail running. I'm actually just getting ready to start a trail run. And in the discussion that I've heard you guys have, you speak about these slow, methodic walks. Yep. And I wondered about the concept of running. So for me, trail running means a very narrow trail. It takes a great deal of concentration, not only on my physical being, but as well as my physical environment. And yep. So I wondered if anything had been sourced as far as the benefits of that.
Yeah, Suzanne can probably give you some research on this, but I want to just give my perspective as a forest therapy guide, which is yes and. So what I mean by that is really important to find ways to keep our bodies strong and healthy and to get those good cardiovascular workouts. And natural environments are a great way to do that. I would much prefer doing running on a trail than doing a treadmill in the gym for a whole variety of reasons. And it's a different practice from what we're talking about with forest therapy, because forest therapy is really about being here, being very present in the moment, and moving slowly. And not to say that running doesn't bring you right into the present moment, because like you mentioned, you've really got to concentrate. You have to be very present to run safely. But we say, when we're giving our orientation to this, we'll say that the ways we know to be in nature, one is to turn is to, for nature to be a setting for adventure and for exercise, and that's a wonderful practice. Another way is for nature to be a place for learning, gathering a lot of naturalist information, knowing about the various species and their ecosystem relationships and so on. And that's wonderful and very important, but that's a different practice. And so what we're introducing with forest therapy, one way to think of it is it's a third way. It's a complementary way to be in nature that adds a whole nother dimension, like another palette of colors for how we can experience the richness of our time spent in nature.
And we only have 1 minute left. I want to read this comment from Cindy in Ames. She says, Japan is a mostly forested country, but Iowa was mostly a prairie and wetland state. Would grassland bathing and wetland bathing work as well as forest bathing? And Susanna, I'll let you respond to that and also have the last word in responding to Audrey's question as well about interacting with nature.
All right, I'll try to speak quickly. Absolutely. We have patches of green in Iowa, and we have to get out and take advantage of them. I also trail run, and I mountain bike, and I spend as much time doing both of those activities regularly as possible. So there are studies that find that exercising in nature have antioxidant properties. So we know that we have free radicals formed by stressors in our environment and all kinds of things that cause us stress and free radical production. And one of the things we look at are ingesting antioxidants in the forms of vitamins and things like that. Well, actually, outdoor exercise is an antioxidant.
All right.
So absolutely, outdoor exercise is wonderful. There are green spaces in Iowa, but it's important to have balance.
Well,
so
thank
we need
you.
To have mindfulness
right.
practices as
thank
well.
You
thank
all
you
so much. This is Talk of Iowa.